Good evening. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio, where we can be found on blogtalkradio.com. It is Wednesday, August the 23rd, 2023. I am hanging out here in the Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost. Thought it was going to have a launch last night. It was not. It was scrubbed. It was just a Starlink. So, yeah, I'm out there last night waiting for launch, and then somebody says, hey, what the heck's that up there? And every once in a while, we see them floating over. You can see them. It's not just there, but we saw them floating over. We're on an island out in the intercoastal. The Starlink satellites of the Earth, that's providing the Internet service for Starlink, so those satellites can be seen orbiting the Earth every once in a while. They orbit at 342 miles, like I said, and every once in a while you see them float by. It's pretty cool. And then they seem to bunch up at the end. A lot of people are, you know, oh, it's aliens or whatever. Who knows? It could be, I guess, but whatever. It's very cool anyway. So, yeah, seeing that. And as I said, we are here on Global Patriot Radio, finding us at blogtalkradio.com Mondays, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the Vito Esposito Show with Big Al, Mama Mia No Sharia. Wednesdays, of course, me, Hank Jones, Poly Sports at 6 o'clock. I am doing a Hankerings tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm going to talk about a couple things related to the Trump indictments. And that is, I'm just hacked about some stuff, so I'm just going to go over them. There is a manned launch this weekend. Mike said Saturday. I thought it was for Friday over Thursday overnight Friday, but maybe it's now Friday overnight Saturday. It's like 3:30 a.m. So yeah, we don't schedule tours around those. People have asked me. You don't schedule a paddleboard / kayak tour in the middle of the night if you're not 100% sure. I mean, if it happens during one of our regularly scheduled tours, core, you know, that's great. But yeah, you don't schedule a tour around that because they can be scrubbed and people are going to want their money back or whatever. I mean, it's a bioluminescence tour. So you're already seeing something. So anyways, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. I've always said you won't have to watch Pac-12 football when you listen to that, but now Pac-12 football won't be for much longer. Today's first Internet Laffy from the Babylon Bee. This is good. Hurricane Hillary makes landfall and destroys over 30,000 emails. That is good. And then the next Internet Laffy. Weak Hurricane Hillary performance blamed on Russian interference. It's so true, though. She blames everything on others. She never takes accountability for any stuff. Let's get to our obituaries. Last week's losses that I deem significant. Not a known name in the public consciousness, but certainly in the world of music. A&M Records co-founder Jerry Moss passed away last Wednesday at the age of 88. He co-founded the company with trumpet player Herb Alpert. After serving in the U.S. Army, thank you, sir, he jump-started his music career promoting a rather successful hit for the Cress. 16 Candles. See it in the, or you hear it in the soundtrack in the, early in the movie for American Graffiti. He and Herb Alpert then started Carnival Records in 1963 when they found out the name was already being used. No, they did not name it or New Carnival Records. Spinal Tap fans will get that one, but instead call it A&M, Alpert and Moss. After selling it to PolyGram in 1988 for $500 million, they ended up suing PolyGram for breach of company culture and settled for an additional $200 million. They were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2006 in the non-performer category. He was also a horse breeder and owner, won the Kentucky Derby in 2005 with Giacomo. Thursday, we lost guitarist and singer Bobby Ely at age 77. His best known work was with the group MFSB. You know that group, if for nothing else, the song TSOP, i.e. The Sound of Philadelphia, that became sort of the theme song for the long-running show Soul Train. We also lost Al Quie, a longtime Minnesota moderate Republican, served as governor of that state, considered by Ronald Reagan evidently for his VP running mate in 1980, a month shy of his 100th birthday. Speaking of 100, we did lose James Buckley at age 100, the brother of noted conservative of the 70s, 80s, 90s, William F. Buckley. I certainly nowhere near as visible, at least publicly speaking, as his brother, but he was nonetheless a very stalwart member of the conservative establishment through the 70s and 80s. I believe he served as a senator at one point. We also lost 57-year-old American orca Lolita to kidney failure at age 57. Friday, we lost Alex Jones, who basically came to fame in recent years with his portrayal as William Henry, the natural father of Bill Pearson in the very, very popular series This Is Us. I liked that show. It was a good show. Passed away from a longstanding pulmonary issue at 66. Sunday, we lost American TV writer David Jacobs to complications of multiple infections at age 84. He brought us two somewhat notable works, namely Dallas and Knott's Landing. I didn't watch much Dallas. I did watch Knott's Landing through college. Hawkeye Mike can attest. He was part of that. Hey, you know what? I forgot. Let's introduce how we can listen to the show. You can listen online. Just go to blogtalkradio.com, look at the live button for chatters, and it'll show you who's live at that point. You can also get an account, log in, and take part in the chat room where IndieHawk KB and Duck Northwest Media sit right now. Or you can call in 319-527-6706 right now. I recognize two numbers on there, Sue from New Mexico and Hawkeye Mike. Also, check us out, Hank Jones Polysports on Facebook. I'll at least be there to pick up my free power up on Candy Crush. I check stuff occasionally. Email hjpsports1980@gmail.com or Twitter, so whatever it's called now, at hpolysports. Didn't know what made me think of that, but anyway, Monday we lost one of America's behind-the-scenes space pioneers, James Burke. No, not the mobster James Burke. James Burke was 97. He was an expert on lunar settlement and exploration. He headed the Ranger program. That was an unmanned series of missions that was created to explore and collect images of the lunar surface. Many thanks to him. Yesterday, we lost former American Olympic champion Tom Courtney to amyloidosis at the age of 90. He won the 800 meters in the 1956 Olympics in Melbourne, and then later anchored the U.S. gold medal winning 4x400 meter relay team. He went on to set the world record in the half mile 880-yard run. That's now been metricized to the 800 meters, which is not a full half mile. He set that in 1957. He was the last, other than Dave Waddell, he was the last U.S. 800 meter gold medalist during the quote-unquote American dominance era, and then Dave Waddell had won again in 1972, and since then the U.S. has only had four bronze medal winners. We haven't even had a gold medalist since Dave Waddell in 1972. That just blows my mind. It really does. I'll talk about the World Track and Field Championships in a little bit, very briefly, because there's more stuff going on. Finally, a plane crash today in Russia apparently took the lives of two of the Wagner Group mercenary leaders. The leader, Yevgeny Prigozhin, age 62, and Dmitry Utkin, age 53. They were listed as passengers on the flight from Moscow to St. Petersburg. Wagner Associated Telegram channel asserts that the plane, possibly owned by Prigozhin, was shot down by Russian military. Mike did confirm via text it is Friday morning, 3:49 a.m. So here's what Hawkeye Mike had to say about Prigozhin. He says, Prigozhin, the leader of Wagner, is dead. Plane shot down almost certainly on Putin's orders. Machiavelli said, never wound the prince. Napoleon said, if you set out to take Vienna, take Vienna. Caesar crossed the Rubicon. Once Prigozhin rebelled and started moving north, he needed to finish the job and take Moscow. Instead, he got cold feet and or believed assurances from Putin. So stupid. He ignored history's lessons. Carpe diem. He is absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. So that's what happened there today. Don't forget, my friends, that Alliance Communications, Central Florida's premier 24-hour telephone messaging and answering service for your medical clinic, hospital clinic, large or small service company, information gathering services, even government agencies. They do a great job. They get the job done. They also work with remote staff. So things like hurricanes or snowstorms are immaterial because you can use staff to access your servers and take calls from anywhere at any time. Look them up on the web. 800-553-3738 is their number, or the web, alliancecommunications.com. And again, if you like working remote or looking for a remote position, give them a call. Here's another internet laughy. Unfortunately, this hits home as probably too true. I mean, it's too believable. It's six leaked plot points from Disney's Snow White remake. Number one, Snow White is now a successful lawyer working at a law firm and is the best lawyer ever. Prince Charming, on the other hand, is a stupid, idiot, legal intern who can't do anything right. He's gay. Number two, to avoid ableism, Dopey's name is changed to Cognitively Divergent-y. Number three, when Snow White defeats Israeli actress Gal Gadot's evil queen, she waves the Palestinian flag and says, Free Palestine, which is an important message for little boys and girls to hear. Also, the evil queen is straight and cisgender. Number four, as she eats the apple, Snow White keeps reminding everyone she's vegan. According to the leaks, she does this 32 times during the film. At one point, the entire cast and crew look directly into the camera and say, Black lives matter. Women's rights are human rights. No human is illegal. Science is real. Love is love. Kindness is everything. And the comment is, wow, why didn't the original feature such a powerful moment? And number six, Snow White visits the gynecologist and discovers she's pregnant. And then she gets an abortion. So empowering. Closes with, the world won't change overnight, so remaking society starts with remaking beloved classic fairy tales. Go Disney! The funny thing they say is, since it didn't work the first couple of times, Disney is trying once again to remake this timeless classic. God. Yeah, what is it about these people that they just can't just let stuff sit? Wow. Interesting results from the track and field championships. The world championships are going on in, I don't even know, Dubai or Qatar or Budapest. So defending world champion Fred Curley didn't even make it out of the semis. Believe it or not, he did not make it out of the semis. Christian Coleman, who was the champ in, I think, 2017 or 19, he did not. He finished fourth. The winner was Noah Lyles, who is a defending 200-meter champion. He won in 9.83, which ironically is the same time Ben Johnson ran before getting flagged for steroids back in 1987. Yeah, breaking 10 now is like nothing this level. So that was an interesting result. Ryan Krauser defended his world championship in the shot put. He's still throwing over 77 feet as a routine now. So Shikari Richardson beat the Jamaicans. It's all about national pride, of course. 10.73, I believe, championship record. So
Yeah.
American sprinters are not off to a bad start. This is bizarre. An international governing body for chess, has banned transgender females from competing against other women. Now, this is the story as it appeared on Newsmax. It's just, you know my stance on normalness, but let's just hear this. Chess body bans transgender women from women's events. The world's top chess federation has ruled that transgender women cannot compete in its official events for females until an assessment of gender change is made by its officials. The decision by Lausanne, Switzerland-based Federation FIDE was published on Monday and has drawn criticism from advocacy groups and supporters of transgender rights. FIDE said it and its member federations increasingly have received recognition requests from players who identify as transgender, and that the participation of transgender women would depend on an analysis of individual cases that could take up to 2 years. Change of gender is a change that has a significant impact on a player's status and future eligibility to tournaments. Therefore, it can only be made if there is a relevant proof of the change provided, the federation said. In the event that the gender was changed from a male to a female, the player has no right to participate in official FIDE events for women until further FID decisions are made. Holders of women's titles who change their genders to male would see those titles abolished, the Federation said, while holding out the possibility of a reinstatement. Person changes the gender back to a woman. If a player has changed the gender from a man into a woman, all the previous titles remain eligible, the Federation said. It acknowledged that such questions regarding transgender players were an evolving issue for chess and that further policy may need to be evolved in the future in line with research evidence. No one immediately responded to emails to top officials and calls to the Federation's headquarters in Switzerland, seeking further comment have also gone unanswered. Word of the decision comes as the Federation is hosting a World Cup event in Azerbaijan, where top players, including number one ranked Grandmaster Magnus Carlsen of Norway, are attending. The Federation also has open competitions that allow all players to take part, as well as specialized categories, such as for women, young players, and even computers. Many sports involving intense physical activity, which chess does not, have been grappling with how to formulate policies toward transgender athletes in recent years. The International Cycling Union has joined the governing bodies of track and field and swimming as top-tier Olympic sports addressing the issue of transgender athletes and fairness in women's sports. Last month, the Cycling Federation ruled that female transgender athletes who transitioned after male puberty will no longer be able to compete in women's races. Okay. So while I applaud those sports who ban post-puberty transgender females from competing as females, I kind of have to wonder about chess. First, when did it become a sport? When did chess become a sport? By the way, welcome T. Bodie to the chat room also. Seriously, why do they have separate competitions from men and women? I get divisions based on age or computer use, but gender in chess? Then again, everything about chess pretty much escapes me. Maybe that's because Brother Tommy usually whips me at it on those rare occasions that we play it. Then there's this near Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Transgender coach changes in locker room with shocked Pennsylvania high school students. Incidents involving a transgender part-time high school tennis coach in Pennsylvania have made some students and parents uncomfortable, and now the school board is divided on whether to renew the coach's contract. Employed at Gettysburg Area School District, the coach was hired as David Yates. Mr. Yates now goes by the name Sasha Yates and publicly identifies as a transgender woman, according to the Gettysburg Times. Mr. Yates has been a seasonal boys and girls tennis coach since 2018. Sports news coverage of the Gettysburg tennis team used the name David Yates in 2021, but in 2022, the coach was being called Sasha Yates. The school district's website lists an email address using the name Sasha, but click on the email address and the name David appears. Mr. Yates did not respond to a request for comment on this story. After incidents involving students, one in the fall of 2022 and another in the spring of 2023, the school board had decided not to rehire Mr. Yates for another season. However, no replacement was hired, and to the surprise of some board members, in July, the name David Yates reappeared on the hiring list for another season of tennis coaching. A vote on August 7th to rehire or not rehire was deadlocked at 3-3, with one person abstaining. They will vote again 2 days ago in what promises to be a packed school board meeting. A social media storm has erupted under the assumption that those voting not to rehire are acting simply because of Mr. Yates' transgender identity. But there is more to the story. In the fall of 2022, the tennis coach entered the girls' locker room where the girls' soccer team was changing. Mr. Yates changed his clothing too, stripping down to bra and panties, a school board member familiar with the situation told the Epoch Times, adding that students reported that it was clear from what they saw that Mr. Yates was still fully a man. Two school board members had students on the soccer team, and at least one of their students was present when this occurred. At that time, the school board decided not to rehire Mr. Yates, but when the name Sasha Yates was used in the next round of coach hirings, not everyone on the school board recognized this as the same person. Gee. So, deception. Yeah. During an April 12th softball game, Steve Carbaugh's 16-year-old daughter went to use the girls' bathroom. Mr. Yates soon followed, and the student found herself alone in the bathroom with the tennis coach. She told her father that Mr. Yates tried to strike up a conversation. The student texted her softball coach from the bathroom as it happened. Michelle, this damn tennis coach just walked into the girls' bathroom, she told her coach. You're a expletive man. When Mr. Carbaugh's daughter told him what had happened, he would question her. I asked her if anything transpired or happened. You know, did he try anything? Did he expose himself or anything? She said no. She said he tried to hold a conversation with me, then I walked out. His daughter told him she was very, very uncomfortable. He contacted the school to see what they were going to do about it. As far as I was concerned, they can't protect my child while in their custody at this point. Points out it's not about hate. While speaking with school officials about the incident, Mr. Carbaugh recalls those officials telling him that Mr. Yates had already been reprimanded for another incident in a locker room. Also states he was told in April that Mr. Yates would not be rehired for another season of coaching, so he dropped the matter. That is, until Mr. Yates ended up on the list of coaches again. He says, now everybody in this area seems to be crying that it is hate, that nobody wants this guy back because he's transgender and it's hate. This has absolutely nothing to do with hate on my part. I don't care what the guy wants to call himself, he said. What's right is right. What's wrong is wrong. My job as a parent is to protect my child, and he had no business going into that bathroom, and his actions proved that he cannot be trusted. He went into a girls' locker room and changed while the girls' varsity soccer team was in there. They talked to him about it, and he went into a girls' restroom facility. When is enough enough? Mr. Carbaugh added, he is not being penalized because of what he calls himself. He needs to be penalized because of his actions and the fact that he can't follow directions. This is a grown man going into a bathroom with a juvenile female. That's a problem. That's a huge problem. Some on the school board wanted to fire Mr. Yates after the bathroom incident, but a solicitor convinced them that, with just a few tennis matches left in the season, it would be better to wait and just not rehire Mr. Yates for the following season. The concern was firing over the bathroom incident could position the board to be sued, a school board member told the Epoch Times. But now that the new season is here, the solicitor has made the same warning, urging the board to rehire Mr. Yates to avoid the risk of litigation. The board is asked to see the paperwork surrounding the locker room and bathroom incidents, ideally before the vote Monday. After the bathroom incident, the school gave Mr. Yates permission to use the official's locker room, which is used by referees, and was told not to go into the girls' locker room or restroom, a school board member opined. The day he came out as being trans, the district should have sat down with him and said, here are the boundaries, a school board member said. The Epoch Times asked the school district to comment. District Communications Coordinator Becky Leathery responded Monday that the district is unable to comment publicly on matters related to personnel. I think I have the solution. When someone, quote unquote, declares they are a woman, or a man for that matter, the test is simple. Take off your pants or your dress or whatever the hell it is you should be wearing. If that test reveals a penis, you're a man. Pure and simple. If you're claiming to be a woman, having a crank says, no, No, you're a man. Doesn't matter how you identify. You have a crank, so you're a man. Methinks our pal Willia Thomas would have erred, as it were, to the side of definitely still a man. How long ago? It's now over 4 years ago. And Steve Dace said it. It's a mental disease. Him going, that guy, that coach going, or whatever he is, going into the bathroom and then trying to strike up a conversation with a girl on the team, that's creepy. That's what it is. He's in a T-Bodie Motes. We play chess, his boys and their friends, all the time. That's cool. But I'm not even sure it makes a difference, man versus woman in that case, in chess. But a coach going into a locker room, hell yeah, that's wrong. A male competing as a biological female when he's still a biological male, yeah, that's wrong. But as Steve Day said, it's a mental disease. In chess, I don't know. It's not a sport. I'm sorry, it's not a sport. It's a game. It's clearly not a sport. I mean, they may want it to be sponsored by sports stuff, but it's not a sport. And so I wonder why the trans thing even applies there. Unless they're trying to admit that women are men, or that men are smarter than women, I don't think that's the case. I think it's just, I don't know. Russia was attempting a lunar landing at the south pole of the moon. It was having issues last Saturday per Yahoo, and then it turned out that the attempt resulted in a crash landing that destroyed the lunar lander. Now, look, I'm a semi-space nut, meaning, no, I don't follow each and every launch anymore, mainly because launches are coming from everywhere for every reason and for every type. In fact, today we just learned India has joined the list of nations achieving a lunar landing. But to me, this is kind of significant in this way. The Soviets, and by extension the Russians, never put a man on the moon. They stopped doing anything for a while after the Americans reached the lunar surface, after American people. But to me, this, you know, it's telling that they still keep trying, especially now, to make inroads into a place where the U.S. once not only dominated, was pretty much the sole presence there. The fact that big media makes note of countries like China and Russia merely landing unmanned craft on the moon tells me it's still notable. Also tells me the U.S. better get Artemis there with a manned flight, ASAP. By the way, there's another, like I said, a launch in a couple of days that is manned, but it's not Artemis. While it won't occur during one of my tours, as I point out, I might stay to watch it anyway. But no, I think space is important. Not from if you watch the right stuff, Lyndon Johnson's character says, we don't go to bed by a lot of a communist moon. I mean, I don't think it's that per se. Now, I do believe Russia or China would want to colonize it. I don't doubt that, but I don't think it can learn from it. And frankly, you know, if we're going to get to Mars, we've got to get on the moon first. We've got to get back to the moon. I mean, you have a whole generation of astronauts who have no idea what it's like. You know, it's one thing to be in a space station or to do a spacewalk. It's another to be on another orbiting body in the universe. I mean, yes, it's within our orbit. It's our satellite, but it's how we're going to get to Mars. It's how we're going to get anywhere else. Sigh. Loud sigh. I cannot believe I am going to read this. Well, actually, maybe I can believe I'm going to read this. It's from American Action News. COVID-19 lockdowns set to return across the U.S. Multiple areas across the U.S. reinstate protocols as COVID-19 levels tick upward. Will we make the same mistake twice? Reinstated protocols, Morris Brown College in Atlanta proactively reintroduced several protocols. Despite having zero COVID-19 cases on campus, the college is mandating the following: face masks for students and employees, excluding staff in private offices, physical distancing, ban on large events and gatherings for 2 weeks, isolation, quarantine procedures, and contact tracing. Lionsgate, the Hollywood film studio, has reinstated its mask mandate. I'm not sure why. Actors are on strike. Employees are now required to wear medical grade in their offices, except under specific conditions, such as being alone in a closed office. Daily self-screenings are mandated, and employees are to stay home if they exhibit symptoms or have recently traveled internationally. Contact tracing is being reintroduced, and at-home test kits are provided as needed. Los Angeles County officially ended the state of emergency in March, but various events and places have seen outbreaks, including the Masked Singer for Fox and Warner Brothers Culver City offices. Department of Public Health noted small increases, but maintained that the overall metrics remain low. LA Times tracker reported a 29% increase in hospitalized cases in California over a 14-day period. Here were some key impacts back in 2021. Substantial increase in mail-in voting. Many states expanded it, eliminating the need for specific excuses. Suspiciously high voter turnout as a result. We had business closures, job losses, supply chain disruptions, decreased consumers mentally, isolation and loneliness, anxiety and stress, depression. We had disrupted learning, increased educational inequality, social development. Drug abuse skyrocketed during COVID, and it's continued post-COVID. So, yeah, I cannot believe I'm reading about reinstitution of COVID lockdowns. But maybe I can believe it. I'll tell you why. We have an election coming up a year from now. Doesn't look good for no matter who his opponent. It's not going to look good. I mean, you know, RFK, they've already gone after RFK, so they're going to pretty much have to go after any other serious Democrat challenger. And with the Hunter Biden stuff and the other Joe Biden stuff ramping up, that's not good. So they've got to figure something out. So this may well be it. Maybe the start of it. I mean, here's the thing. They're probably not smart enough or good enough to create something new. So just reinstall COVID as the default. So T. Bodie says that the females do as well as the guys in chess, and he agrees it's not a sport. But anyway, you know, it's really I just think we better be careful. We better watch it. We better not let ourselves get caught behind the eight ball. So when you start seeing stuff from your local municipality, get down there, get on the phone. Don't wear your mask if you're not sick. In the case of Jack Smith versus Donald Trump, the Epoch Times brings us this piece. An information security officer will be appointed. Justice Department is appointing a classified information security officer in the special counsel case Jack Smith has brought over Donald Trump's efforts to challenge the 2020 election results. Can you believe we actually, that's the kind of thing we get indicted for? I mean, they're going after anything. The motion was filed yesterday, along with a motion to enter the non-protective order. U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan had earlier approved a limited protective order that did not restrict President Trump's access to any records he already has access to and could access sensitive information that was part of the case, but could not publicly share the sensitive information without court authorization. She allowed the DOJ to mark several types of materials as sensitive. The order covers any document or information that has been classified by any executive branch agency, other than something President Trump might have classified, including that with President Trump already has or is aware of. Any classified information provided by the government to the defense is to be used solely by the defense to prepare a defense in this case, it reads. The defense may not disclose or cause to be disclosed in connection with this case any information known or reasonably believed to be classified information except as otherwise provided in this order. The original request was much broader. President Trump pleaded not guilty, he made a post on Truth Social and said, if you go after me, I'm coming after you. His campaign followed with videos featuring the prosecutors in his cases alleging election interference. Yeah. I do have a question. Will there be an actual kangaroo in the courtroom during any trial activity? Seriously. This is a kangaroo court. Will they have a kangaroo in the courtroom? It's important to know that. Mike made a point. If they try to impose new COVID restrictions, it's time for civil disobedience. I'll be in the streets and will refuse to wear a mask. I'm done with that crap, and I think many Americans feel the same way. He's absolutely right. It is bizarre. I mean, when we started seeing this, I kind of thought, what's the, why are they bringing this back? And then I realized, well, it's 2023. We got an election in a year. And to go after President Trump, what's another way they could go after him? Do it in a form, in a forum where people can't be there to support him. Oh, COVID orders, can't have people there. So they're going to try him on TV in the media, basically. That's how they're going to try to go at it. So the time to start is now. Basically, the first GOP presidential debate is tonight in Milwaukee. President Trump will not take part. Personally, I think that's inadvisable. He could actually do a ton of good. Opinion, not the least of which would be to stress the importance of actual talking points about La Dopey Nostra versus sniping at each other. Another possible no-show is North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, who headed to the ER today after sustaining an injury while playing basketball with his staff. For the record, Doug, he looks like a chucker, possibly even a ball hog. Now, that doesn't really matter when it comes to being president, but I won't ever vote for a chucker or a ball hog. That's just me. An interesting tidbit on the current fad candidate, as per big media, says Vivek Ramaswamy was already worth millions when he accepted the Soros Award to pay for law school. Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy claims he accepted a Soros scholarship to pay for law school because he had no other way to afford it after graduating from Harvard. However, he reported $2.2 million income that very same year. Ramaswamy defended himself last month after it was revealed he accepted a $90,000 award from the Paul and Daisy Soros Fellowship for New Americans, founded by George Soros' late brother, Paul. He claimed he couldn't have afforded to attend Yale Law otherwise. There was a separate scholarship that I won at the age of 24, 25, when I was going to law school in my mid-20s, in my early 20s when I didn't have the money, and it was a merit scholarship that hundreds of kids win. That was partially funded, not by George Soros, but by Paul Soros, a relative, his brother. And to be perfectly honest with you, I would have had to be a fool to turn down that scholarship at the age of 24. He did not disclose that he was simultaneously employed by QBT Financial, an investment managed firm in New York. He reported in 2011, he reported $2.25 million in total income. He reported income a total of $1.173 million in the 3 years leading up to that. He won a generic scholarship that hundreds of students win. He would have been a fool to turn it down, blah, blah, blah. Soros expressed his desire for Ron DeSantis to win the nomination, believing that if he does, Trump would run as a third-party candidate, all but guaranteeing Joe Biden's reelection. This was in regard to comments that George Soros made at the Munich Security Conference in February. Yeah. So, yeah, that, I don't know. I'm not going to watch it. I do wish President Trump would take part, but it is what it is. The official cause of death of former Obama chef Tafari Campbell has been released by the Massachusetts Executive Office of Public Safety and Security. And a non-shocker, the cause is listed as, quote, accidental drowning, unquote. I'll buy that, at least on the surface. Get it? Never mind. I said I was done with this for the moment. I am, but people have been asking about it still. Fox News, meanwhile, partly in response to President Trump's decision not to participate, has a new policy in place. It's not just for President Trump, by the way. It will no longer allow surrogates in the debate spin room after it won't allow Trump surrogates in the debate spin room. But they also say they won't allow any non-show candidate, no-show candidates. They will not have access to the debate spin room where top supporters of candidates tout the person they are supporting and attack foes. Pains that did not qualify would also not be allowed. So there you have it. The former president, by the way, Mr. Trump, taped a pre-recorded interview with Tucker Carlson. That will be streamed on social media around the time of the debate. CBS News poll that Trump cited to justify not showing up said it's likely Republican primary voters. 73% said in that poll that Trump should show up. 27% said he should not. Steve Doocy, meanwhile, thinks he's helping President Dopey Joe by skipping the debates, arguing that by doing so, he opens the door for Dopey Joe to skip debating Trump if Trump becomes the Republican Party nominee. Doocy was right. He says, unfortunately, by skipping the debates, Donald Trump may actually be helping, because he's giving Dopey Joe an excuse for not debating. Yeah, he's right. Steve Doocy is right. If he doesn't show up, he's opening that door. Evidently, Jim Jordan has issued a subpoena to Citibank. And not sure exactly what's in it, but can tell you a little bit. So basically, Citibank had discussions with the FBI on information sharing after January 6th. Jim Jordan said, he announced a subpoena last week. He said Citibank has been dodging requests for information into major banks sharing private financial data with the FBI. The committee, select subcommittee, recently obtained documents that raise new concerns regarding the extent to which financial institutions, including Citibank, may have shared customer information with federal law enforcement despite the customers having no individualized nexus to criminal conduct. In particular, these documents indicate that a Citibank representative was included on emails and Zoom discussions organized by the FBI and the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, focused on identifying the best approach to information sharing, both strategic and operational, in the wake of January 6th. These documents suggest that the executive branch was brainstorming informal methods outside of legal process for obtaining private customer information from financial institutions. Jordan previously requested that Citibank share its data voluntarily. They failed to do so. Said, in light of your lack of compliance with our earlier voluntary request and the representation from your counsel that Citibank requires a subpoena to comply with our oversight, please find attached a subpoena from the Committee on the Judiciary to compel the production of the requested documents. It would be interesting, by the way. Okay, so wait a second. Back in May, Jim Jordan opened an investigation into Bank of America's voluntary provision of consumer data after retired FBI supervisory intelligence analyst George Hill said the bank, with no directive from the FBI, data mined its customer base, and they data mined a date range of 5 to 7 January of 2021. Any Bank of America customer who used a Bank of America product. Yeah, that's very problematic. But it tells you a couple of possibilities. It tells you, one, that this probably was very much a setup, but it probably also tells you that this is how they're finding scapegoats. They didn't have scapegoats in advance, so a way to get scapegoats, find out who was there. Put pressure on them financially. We have a caller. I have a caller that I'm going to have on in a second, but we have another caller. Sue, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's up? How you doing?
Hi, I'm fine. I just wanted to say something about Trump not being there. Number one, Steve Ducey is a hack. He's
sure.
The one who, before polls closed on the last election, declared Joe Biden the winner with glee. So
yeah.
Anything Steve Ducey says means absolutely nothing to me. I'm
sure.
Glad Trump is not going to the debate. All it would do, is, and Fox is upset because their ratings are going to, you know, go down.
Oh,
he's not going to give them ratings. Fox News is run by Paul Ryan and his group. All they would do at the debate tonight is the moderators would attack Trump and all of the rest of him attack Trump. Do you think he would really get in very much of his talking points? He'll get in a whole lot more of his talking points by talking with Tucker Carlson. I think it's a brilliant move, and I say good for him. I am going to watch Tucker Carlson. I will not help Fox's ratings whatsoever. And then later, I will watch the debate. Also, one very upsetting thing that has happened is one of Ron DeSantis' supposed, you know, rhino packs released his campaign strategy. So everyone has it. What is he going to do? This is a horrible thing to do to DeSantis. I can't even imagine anything he tries to do tonight. You know, it was a pretty good plan, debate
sure.
plan, but now it's out in the open. Why did they do that? Let me tell you one thing. If Ron DeSantis gets a nomination, the rhinos will go after him because he's too much like Trump in his governing, you know, how
sure.
he governs.
Absolutely.
And, you know, yeah, anyway, go ahead. You want to say something?
Well,
I'm sorry.
Actually, you have an agree. You have a support in the chat room. T. Bodie agrees that Trump should not go through. My issue is Steve Ducey, yes, while he's a Fox News hack, he is right in that he does, you know, this does open the Pandora's box that, you know, Dopey Joe can, I mean, we already had a hard enough time getting Dopey Joe to debate the first time, you know.
I got to tell you, do you honestly think you're going to put Joe Biden in a debate regardless of whether Trump tonight or not? Will never happen.
Good point.
Joe Biden doesn't have the brain cells to be in a debate. So that is a moot point.
Yeah, maybe. You know, I'm just worried that, one, you're right that he would be attacked. President Trump would be attacked. I think the other, you know, it's funny that a lot of these people that are running are people that, you know, were helped out a lot by President Trump. And it's a tough issue. But I personally wish he would debate. But on the other hand, you're right. It's not going to be – I mean, the debate itself is meaningless. It's not going to change anybody's mind for the most part. I mean, it's and that's why I say the bigger question is, you know, suddenly ramping up this COVID stuff. I really think – you know, they're getting it in place now, and I know I sound like a conspiracy theorist, but you know what? We've already seen it happen once. You know, we saw what happened in 2020, and that's why I think we have to be vigilant.
That is exactly what they're doing because they can't win any other way. But, you know, what I had a problem with is, look, it's not so much the other candidates. Yeah, they should attack Trump. I'd be all fine with that. Where I have a problem is, and I guarantee you, the Fox moderators would be attacking Trump.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big reason that he's not going. And
sure,
good for him. But there is no way, no way. And, you know, Robert Kennedy has already tried to ask for a debate with Biden. Biden has refused. The DNC has refused. You honestly think they're going to have him debate the Republican candidate? That's a mute point. That's a ridiculous point. And Steve Ducey, as far as I'm concerned, is a complete idiot. I can't stand him whatsoever. Ever.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm afraid that,
on the other hand, a Trump, there's another point you made, a Trump-Biden debate. It's not a Trump-Biden debate. It's a Trump versus the moderator, and it's not even a debate. It's Trump versus the moderator and who controls the microphone. And that's, you know, we've already seen that one. So, thanks for your call.
I think he's brilliant in what he's doing. Anyway, okay, thank you. And
thanks, we'll talk.
Continue.
Thanks. We'll talk to you later. Bye. Always enjoyable. Sue from New Mexico. And she makes some great points about Trump. And T. Bode agrees with her. You know, he should not go the way. I just think any chance you have to get your message out is a chance you don't waste. But, you know, maybe today's world, it is a waste. So anyway, I'm swerving. I said it today we would talk football, start our preview, and I'm bringing in Avid Mike. Are you there, sir?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I had you muted just in case you wanted to mute me, and my son was going crazy. So.
Oh, okay. Not a problem. I wanted to start with you today on our preview. For those that don't know, Mike and I have known each other several years. He is active in the Orlando Hawkeye scene. And so today, as we get to our big news of today, Noah Shannon, Hawkeye defensive lineman, is being suspended for the 2023 season over this gambling issue. And I have a lot of stuff to say about it, but I really want to hear yours. One, Kirk Ferentz points out he didn't break any laws. Gambling's
right
everywhere, so I don't know. What are you hearing? What are your thoughts on it?
I have a hard time that it's only Iowa. You know, we have Virginia Tech had a player last year that was suspended for 9 and got reduced to 6 with the appeal. But I just have a hard time that it's just these smaller areas that have issues with it. And
absolutely,
why is it not being looked at more widespread, you know, more of a wider net going over all the universities? Like, if you have one issue, all right, it's a one-off. Now you're having two major universities and Power 5 schools that are having it. All right, we now need to investigate every school, because if that's the issue, then it has to be. And, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, everything. I mean, he's done everything right. Noah Shannon, he's bowed out of Big Ten media days because he thought it wouldn't bring, you know, it would bring negative to
the light. Right, right.
And you know, he's cooperated with NCAA investigators, and this is how they pay it back. I mean, it's like they always say, when Alabama breaks the rules, you know, Austin Peay State is going to pay the price. You know, I mean, there's a real But I mean, we're also seeing most college sports telecasts. You know, we see advertising for it. We see, you know, I just don't get it. I mean, other guys, Jack Johnson, Aaron Bloom, Reggie, I don't know about Reggie Bracey, but Arlen Bruce clearly says he voted or bet on games. And, you know, the trip on the 3-yard line, the muffed punt, I mean, that's just, you know. So anyway, it's being appealed. So Kirk Ferentz was very adamant in his support, and Hawkeye Mike, the other Mike, seems to think it. You know, there's the worry is that he could get in trouble with the NCAA for speaking out, but I think he has every right to. So,
I don't think so. He has every right to. It's an arcane rule. Now that it's legal in a lot of the states across the country, it has to. Yeah, they did relook at it this year, and they changed the, like, I guess the criteria for being suspended and you know, a little bit clearer. But it has to be looked at as a whole, not just, oh, wait a minute, it's back in the light. We need to update. It has to be completely tore down and built back up, because you said it yourself. I mean, you watch any pro college, even some of the stuff they advertise for high school, has sports betting that is part of the advertising that pays for that programming. So if you're going to be one that sponsors it, it has to be something that has to be, you know, given more attention to.
Yeah. Now, I get the, you know, the problem with sports gambling and from a player perspective. I mean, you know, they say, okay, Noah Shannon didn't bet on Iowa's football team, but he might have bet on Iowa's women's basketball team or against them, whatever.
Yeah, that's what they're
saying. Anything where there can be undue influence, you have to sort of be, you know, leery of that. I mean, the integrity of the game and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sorry, I just don't see the average player being a threat to a girls' basketball player, you know, like, oh, no, he'll – I mean,
well,
they're betting –
they never returned to campus.
Yeah, I mean –
during the NCAA tournament, they never returned to campus unless he had her direct line to half the team. There's nothing he could do to influence.
Yeah. No, I agree. And it's not like he bet against Iowa, most likely, you know. I mean, I don't think anyway, so – So let's start
with Aaron Blom. That was Aaron Blom taking the under against the Iowa State that year. So
right, and I don't know what Arlen Bruce did. I really hope Arlen Bruce isn't practicing at Oklahoma State. But and the reason Noah Shannon had not been practicing was because of injury. He had a slight injury. So that was why. So you know, I think he would have been participating otherwise. So let's start with the defense. So. This obviously is a hit to the defensive line, but we've got a lot of depth. So what's your feeling on the defensive line, other than the fact Noah Shannon is presumably not going to play at the beginning anyway?
Noah Shannon was going to be just a bonus. You know, there have already been talks by many different people from, you know, the boards that you and I are on to other pundits that are out there saying that this could be the best defensive line that's been in the Kirk Ferentz era. And you think that's a huge statement with, you know, going back to like 08 and 09, you know, and then the last couple of years. So I think it would have been just depth and could have, you know, the rotation would have been larger. But I still think the defense as a whole, if we can get somebody to play the linebacker level, you know, Higgins comes on and Nick Jackson can, you know, do what he does, you know, 100 plus. I think we're going to be fine. And I think they're finding depth at corner. You know, Deshaun Lee really has looked great in camp. So has the kid from California. God, I can't think of his name. The one that got burned in the Nebraska game.
Oh, TJ Hall. Yeah. Yeah, TJ Hall.
Yeah, Hall has looked a lot better. He's still making mistakes, but, you know, that's part of the learning curve. He was thrown into the Wolves. And, you know, so I think we're going to be. Defense, I think, could be as good or better than last year's and as a whole, and that's hard to say because of you know, losing Jack Campbell. But I think the defensive line is just going to be that much more talented.
Well, I here's a key that I note. Jay Higgins, who I think is going to be – I mean, they're talking about him, and I think we've seen it, you know, over the couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But last year, he wasn't just in on, like, third and short or third – you know, he was – I mean, because his run support is almost unparalleled. I mean, he excels in the run side of things. But I think the fact that he was in on a lot of third and long plays kind of tells you that, you know, he wasn't just, you know, a situational player, that he's got the all-around skills. And I think Nick Jackson, you know, really Nick Jackson was a reaction to Justin Jacobs going to, quote-unquote, his dream school. Remember,
interview? You remember when Justin went down, you know, Higgins was the next guy in, and he played a ton of downs that was his. So, and you're right on that aspect. I think more of Jackson was they didn't have anybody that could be either Benson or Campbell.
Yeah.
So they needed
to
go and get somebody that was a tackling machine. You know, it may not be as an overall athlete like Campbell was, who, by the way, is having an unbelievable camp for the Lions. So,
which is not a shock. So
no.
The fact that you know, it's just not a shock. So yeah, I worry about depth on the back end. At the up front, you know, they were 9 or 10 deep already,
yeah.
You know, and in a real sense, Noah Shannon was a bonus, as you said. Anyway, you know, this is his COVID year. So that, which becomes another issue, does he get that COVID year back or not? But I mean, that's another matter. Here's a couple of things I noted in the defensive backs. You were talking about TJ Hall, but Devin Hilson, who I don't think he's on the depth chart. I haven't seen him, but he came as a running back out of Des Moines. He's now listed as a defensive back. So obviously they're confident in their running back depth as well. And the other thing I know, you know, I mean, Terry Roberts, you know, he transferred to Miami, he ends up at Michigan State. Something needs to be done there. I don't know what, because I know conferences can have more strict than regular NCAA, but something's got to be done about guys, you know, entering the transfer portal and having immediate eligibility within the conference. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I have to draw a line somewhere, and that's where I think I'm – you know,
well,
you're
a lot of people are saying it's a one-time thing. It should be a one-time thing, and then you have to sit a year if you have any eligibility left. You can't make a dip twice within a period. Basically, he took the January one and jumped in, and then he took the summer one and jumped in because he wasn't going to be the starter in Miami. And now he's listed as a make-or-break player for the Spartans, I saw.
Yeah.
That he will make or break their season. He's one of four players that could do that. So,
and if you may have noticed, there have been some NCAA transfer requests that have been turned down for immediate eligibility. So, you know, they're going to have to review it. They're going to have to come through with something because, I'm sorry, but guys transferring in conference and having immediate eligibility, I have a real problem with that. Now, look, I mean, Tyrone Tracy, I think he did everything right, and he's a good kid. And, you know, having met him, I can say that. But he still was immediately eligible. And Charlie Jones was even worse because he went through spring ball. I think there's got to be something to that, too. You know, somebody goes through spring practice. If they transfer, they're not eligible the next year. You know, I mean, I don't think that's unreasonable.
Exactly.
I don't.
No, I don't. Okay, so, I agree with you. That's the way it was always up until when did they have the new rules going? What?
Pretty much the same time.
Five, 6 years ago?
And it was more recent than that. I mean, it was sort of at the same time as NIL was coming in.
Yeah, because it was when Oliver Martin made his move from Michigan to us, and it was an immediate. Remember, he had to go through the NCAA to make sure it was good. The clearinghouse or whatever you want to call it.
Right. And that's right. And what was it? Was it just that the rules changed, or was he given the exemption? That's what I don't even remember that. I mean,
I think he was given the exemption, but I think at the same time they were doing they basically created that portal. I mean, it was there, but it was given more liberties. You know, you could basically anybody could jump in and make the move, and because it used to be, you know, grad students, or you made the move and you had to sit a year.
Yeah. Yeah, you had to have a reason to get immediate eligibility. And for a while, they were granting it to everybody except, of course, the Big Ten teams. But, I mean, Ohio State was getting it. Michigan was getting it, but nobody else was. So, you know.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, speaking of which, people that I've heard people talking about the Big Ten expansion and people saying, you know, this is just great. You know, this is going to be great for Iowa. I think all you need to do is look at the four Pac-12 schools that are left out in the cold to know what can happen to an Iowa or a Wisconsin even or a Nebraska. I mean, you know, if once you're deemed irrelevant, you have no protection. And that's what's basically happened to Oregon State and Washington State and Cal and Stanford. You know, I mean,
one of the podcasts I listened to the other day made that point. If you were to go to a 25 team, which is what it looks like, they're trying to just get two mega conferences, the SEC and the Big Ten, that they're going to start looking at what's your value. Right now in the Big Ten, we were a top five, you know, on a normal basis, top five, top 16 all the time. Now with bringing these four teams in, now we slide back to like 8, 9, you know, anywhere between 7 and 9. If you go to 25, we're not a big enough demographic as a state to have enough viewers to make it worthy of us being there. And then you're going to go with the population base instead of teams that are good.
Yeah.
because it's all about the dollar then.
I mean, Washington State said, their AD said a couple weeks ago, they'll still continue to operate as a Power 5 program, but knowing that, you know, that's just in the interim. I mean, next year, that's all off the table. You know, I mean, those four schools are you know, and I got to believe that USC and UCLA and the other two, Washington and Oregon, I can't believe that they're going to get full shares right away. You know, nobody else that's joined the league is going to get full shares right away.
Washington and Oregon, the last two, are getting half shares for the entire contract, which was still more money than they were going to get with that Apple contract that the Big 12 was trying to do, that subscription-based one. They were only getting like $25 to $30 million a year per team, whereas even with a half share, they're getting $40, $45 million, maybe upwards of $50 on a half share during that, you know, during the same time. So it was a no-brainer.
Sure. I don't know. I'm not crazy about all this stuff. So that's just me. So, okay. So let's
well,
move
somebody
to the
from your, somebody from our past is pretty excited. Chuck Long, I was listening to his podcast today. And he's all for it. He's excited. He loves the idea of Big Ten football from, you know, basically 11 a.m. Central time to 1:30 in the morning. You know, he's really excited by it.
He obviously hasn't gone to see a game, like hasn't been on vacation in Seattle when our noon game, you have to get up at the crack of whatever to basically have to get and in Seattle, which is not a cheap place, you start your day with a $12 Bloody Mary, you know, at your sports bar. I mean, the sports bar we went to wasn't even, I mean, they were barely able to open because they had to clean from the night before. I mean, you know, sorry. And now people are saying, you know, tailgating is going to be great. And this buddy of mine, that's from my way past early in my youth, who says, you know, Outson Stadium and all the, you know, the tailgating is going to be, you know, elevated. And I'm like, dude, I think you're going to find out every other school, you're going to see a lot of bib overalls, and UCLA fans and USC fans aren't used to bib overalls. So you're going to see a lot
and
of that.
Think about it. And the fact of, you know, everybody moves out of Iowa. I mean, look at you and I, we did it. And you know that the West Coast has a lot of Iowa fans. So you're not going to dominate the tailgating. It's going to be probably a 50-50 like it is at most games, except for Michigan, Penn State, and maybe Ohio State. And that's it. Every other one, we're 50-50 with everybody else when it comes to tailgating when we're away. So
yeah, and I don't think you know, those teams will come into the Big Ten and everybody's saying, you know, it's the speed and all that stuff. I think they'll find out, you know, a couple of November games in Madison, you know.
Yep.
Up
in Minneapolis.
Yeah, and week in and week out of playing teams that have 300-pound linemen, you know, bearing down on you, it's not, you know. I'm not to say that they won't do well, that they can't, but I just don't think, you know, anybody that thinks they could just come in and dominate, I think it's just really.
It's the same mindset that people had with Nebraska. Nebraska's going to come in. It's going to be the Big Three and the Elite 11, you know, when that happened. And it didn't work out because, like you said, it's a shifting of the way you play the game. I mean, the Pac-10 wasn't much different, or Pac-12, whatever it was. Wasn't much different than the Big 12. They didn't really play defense. It was all fast-paced offense. So coming into the league where five of the top 15 defenses in the entire country are year in and year out, it seems like it's going to be a rude awakening when that happens.
Yeah. So now let's move to the offense. First of all, Cade, Kirk Ferentz expects him to be playing in week one. You know, our running backs are pretty set, and supposedly they are looking good in camp. The tight ends, we've got, you know, everybody's seeing Eric All and Luke Lachey could be, you know, Fant, Hawkinson, Mark II. The wide receivers are our big question mark, I think, you know, other than Ragaini being back. Here's an interesting note. Spencer Petras is not even enrolled, but he's still listed on the roster on ESPN, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, he's coaching the offensive line, if I remember. He's like an special assistant, you know, like a grad assistant, whatever you want to call it, and it's the offensive line. So,
what do you think we need to see offensively, like in week one and two? What is it that will make you think that they've made some changes and they're serious about them?
Well,
not
winning 5-3.
Yeah, but I mean, what specific? What
like
kind of,
South Dakota
what kind of stuff? I mean, is it play
you
calling
know what?
That we're looking? Is it scheme? I mean, everybody says, "Oh, we need to change our scheme." You know, when you have a crappy offensive line, it doesn't matter what your scheme is. People say, "Oh, you can run things
well,
to cover for the offensive line." If you did that, everybody would do that. You know, if that really worked, everybody
mm-hmm.
would do it. And of course, it doesn't work always. So,
it really, and people aren't going to be happy with this because it's me when I say this because most people want a more high-powered offense. But I think we just need to – these first two games is just run the ball. First off, we don't know how good Cade's thigh is going to be with that
right.
strain. So that takes the pressure off of him in the first game. You do what you need to for passing in that. Use your tight ends. Use some crossing routes. But I think you take the three-headed monster that we have with LeSean, Caleb, and Jasmium and just roll the elbow in them. We should be able – even if we can't pass block, we have road graders when it comes to the offensive line that we should be able to make gaping holes and have all day running. And I think just set a presence that we're going to be what we are, which is a run with a complimentary pass, and then it'll start opening those up. Nobody will be putting seven in the box all the time on us, you know, because they'll try to, and then it'll open up the passing game, I guess is the way I would say. I don't know. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I would like to see I get a little more specific. I would like to see us fake a jet sweep once in a while. You know, we did that a couple times back when we had Wadley and LeSean Daniels. I remember a play against Illinois. We faked a jet sweep to Wadley and then pitched to LeSean, and he just had open ground to the end zone. I mean, and it, you know, it was just I'm tired of seeing our ends, our wide receivers used on those reverses. Number one, I'm tired of seeing those run inside the 5-yard line. I mean, you know, all that stuff. I would like to see that. I'd like to see. I mean, we don't have to be that exotic. You know, we don't have to run every play as a trick play or anything like that. I think you nailed it with the run. When are we best? When we've established the run? Now, okay, 2004, but that's 1 year. But 2004 showed that we had the capability not to be, you know, constrained by a lack of running game. But, I mean, still,
right.
our bread and butter has, you know, we run a play-action system. We do not run, you know, basketball on grass. We do not run that, you know, we don't run those kinds of offenses. We
mm-hmm.
never have. And I think, you know, we can run out of the shotgun, you know, believe it or not. I mean,
yep.
You can play action out of
the shotgun. There's a lot you can do, so.
Yeah, I think mix it up, though. Don't go exclusively play shotgun. Don't go exclusively under center. I think that, you know, they have to mix it up, but they don't have to mix it up so much that we run a, you know, I mean, I got really tired of seeing Arlen Bruce run a reverse. I really did.
That we can speculate now that he wasn't really trying, so.
Yeah, true.
I don't know. I'm not going to say that. That's horrible for me to say, but.
Well, no, but it bears mentioning because it's, you know, the info is out there. You know, I mean, I mean, that's gotta as a coach, I think that's gotta make any coach just be livid with him. You know, and so
You know, the other thing that I think we need to do two more things real quick, and I won't take up much more time on it.
No.
I think we need to be more. Do more downfield passing in, you know, not in obvious downs. You know, they talk about throwaway downs, so second one, third and one, where, you know, if you're running the ball well enough, or we're known as a quarterback sneak team, use those to our advantage. I mean, I know you said you're a little bit iffy on the wide receiver group, but everything that I've been hearing out of camp that Seth Anderson is the real deal.
Yeah, Seth Anderson is the
and Deontay Vines is he would have been great last year if he hadn't hurt his wrist in training camp. He looked great in camp too, you know. And then Nico, and then they're saying the kid from Tampa, Jarrett Bowie, has looked really good. Like he catches literally couldn't catch anything the first week of practice. Hasn't dropped a ball since.
Yeah.
So, and he's size. He's 6'2", 6'3", I think, or something like that. And he's just another person you can put out there.
So, it sounds like...
I think those two things.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's just it. I mean, play action is great, and we have to utilize it, but we sometimes have to decide that we are going to go downfield. I mean, it's just, you know, you don't have to do it every down. You don't have to, and again, we always talk about, you don't have to be successful on every downfield play. And downfield doesn't have to be a bomb either. Downfield can be 15 yard, you know. It just needs to be something that takes the top off the defense a little bit and makes, the, and
right.
makes them
playing,
accountable.
If they're playing safeties down all the time on us because of running the ball successful, and it's an obvious run of second down or third and one, you know, second one or third and one, bring Caleb in or run Steph Anderson on a skinny post where they're trying to hit him at 15 yards or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just to make honest make the defense honest against the run.
Yeah. And I mean, when we come into our obvious, I mean, either A, when the running back is standing next to the quarterback in shotgun, or when we split them into the slot, it's like, okay, Brian, I'm not putting this all on Brian. The same Brian Ferentz that call his way out of a paper bag did some brilliant things in, you know, against Ohio State and against USC. So, you know, and in other games too. I mean,
well, I'll give you, when you're done, I got a fun stat for you on Brian.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know, out of the top 10 offensive outputs by Iowa in the Kirk Ferentz era, Brian has two of the top six, number five and number six. Ken O'Keefe has number one and number two. And I think Greg Davis has number three. But it's not like he can't do it.
Sure.
It's just, I don't know if it's stubbornness and he's like, I'm going to make this work no matter what, or they just didn't have anything better these last 2 years with Petras that, you know, what's his name was just, it was no better. So they just stuck with it. I think the biggest thing is we've missed on a lot of offensive linemen and a lot of right receivers where we have just recruited horribly over the last four or five cycles. And it just came to bear last year.
Yeah. And I think part of it's desperation too.
Yeah.
You know, I think sometimes you think, well, gosh, this'll trick them. And it's not about tricking them. The hallmark of Kirk Ferentz has been imposing our will. Like, we're going to run off tackle and we're going to do it well enough that you can't stop us. And that's it, you know, because we execute better and our guys try harder and all that. Well, it seems like there's a little of that's been missing. It's almost like, well, God, we kind of suck at everything. So let's just do some stupid shit and see what works. And I don't know how that can succeed. I really don't. So.
Right. I'm with you. It's just like, you know what? We always talk about it. We're going to just do our thing better than you can do your thing. And it's, we've gone away from that philosophy.
Yeah. So our special teams, kicker and punter are obviously set. Blom will most likely be gone. So whatever. And I don't know what happens.
But they picked up
Taylor, should they? What?
They picked up a guy in the portal, but 2 days ago for the backup kicker.
Oh, they did. Okay, so they're counting on Blum.
Central Michigan, the kid's got 2 years left.
What about Taylor? I mean, if something happens to him, I'm a little scared. I'm a little more scared that we have two long snappers listed on our depth chart. What the hell is with that? But
okay. We have a backup punter now. They got one of those. They got one in from Western Iowa.
Okay.
They got a guy that averaged like just under 40 yards, but he had like 20 kicks inside the 20 last year.
Okay. Well, that's a positive. So I'm going to hold you to these. These are preliminary guesses, so I'm not going to hold you to them. But right now, what's your projected win total, including bowl games? What's your projected win total?
God, you're killing me on that one. 11.
11? Okay.
Yeah,
I'm going to say 10.
With bowl game, 10 and 2. I think we'll stumble on somebody we should beat, and I think we'll beat somebody that, you know, we're not supposed to. You know, like, I think we could split the Penn State-Wisconsin games, and then we lose to somebody stupid. Like, I'm going to go to the game at Wrigley Field, and I'm probably going to watch them lose. Yeah, that's how I feel, that we always stumble on something we shouldn't. and we beat somebody we should. So,
okay. Do we win? Do
you
we
know
win
what
the
I mean?
Big,
some of, yeah.
Do we win the Big Ten West?
If we beat Wisconsin, yes.
Okay, so I'm going to say yes with a caveat. I'm going to say we do as well, and I'm saying no caveats. I just think I don't know the why everybody's talking about Wisconsin. What
I don't either.
What
that's just everybody. You know,
what
rhetoric.
Games do you completely expect a loss? What games do you just are you conceding?
Just going to Penn State and it being
yeah.
a whiteout, and as good a running backs as they have, and this special quarterback in Aller, I just worry.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one game that I can't wrap my mind around that we could win. I mean, like having like a great confidence in it. I think naturally we can have a chance. I mean, you've looked at the past years, but that's the game that I earmark as almost a guaranteed loss. And I hate to say it.
I agree. So that's mine too. So what's your, if you have to give a percentage, what's your percent confidence in winning the West? Give a percentage.
I'm 90% on it because the schedule just sets up so well. Nothing in the you know, the crossovers are with Michigan State and Rutgers, so you don't have to overcome anything on that side of it. Yeah, we have to travel to Minneapolis, but we own that place.
Yeah.
We owe Bielema because we should have won that game last year.
Yeah.
Purdue, they're in a whole new regime of a team that's going for more of a path to probably more of a defensive-minded because they've got a defensive-minded coach now.
Yeah.
Nebraska's Nebraska. So I really am – I'm 90%.
Okay. What's your percentage confidence in us winning the Big Ten outright? In other words, we win the West and we win the Big Ten championship game. What's your percentage there?
Whew. Can I have a caveat on that one too?
Absolutely.
Depending on the teams, two teams. If it's Ohio State, we make it against Ohio State, 25% or less.
Okay.
If we make it and it's Michigan, I'm going to push it to 60% chance of winning it just because of Cade going against the team that, you know, tapped into the side after taking them to the Big Ten championship and the playoffs the year before.
If it's Michigan, what was your percentage for Michigan?
I was going to give a 60%. I would give a 60% chance of winning the Big Ten championship against them if we played them.
Okay. I would say I'm just going to go overall. I'm just going to say my percentage is I'm going to say 40% overall, no matter who we play, if we make it there.
Okay.
For this reason, you know, we've been there twice. Once was the heartbreaker. The other time was absolute humiliation. But I think Kirk Ferentz is just, you know, I think he's ready to win a Big Ten championship game. So that's why I say that. So what's your confidence?
That's the only thing he needs to put in his cap is being the only thing he hasn't. He's shared Big Ten titles, but he doesn't have an outright one.
Yeah, exactly. So what's your confidence in us reaching the college football playoff?
Well, if we're doing everything we've talked and we've won the Big Ten, we more than likely have only got one loss, and I don't see them not putting a one-loss Big Ten team in the playoff.
Right. Okay. So what's your percentage?
I would say if everything else went the way we, you know, the bullish on the other things, and I would say if we won the Big Ten, I would almost have to 95% that we'd have to be in the playoff.
Okay,
if we made it,
I'm going to give you that caveat. I'm going to say overall my percentage is 15%. I just don't, in the grand scheme of things, I just think too much can happen, you know? I mean, it's just.
Yeah.
You know,
and
I agree with you.
And I was just kind of going about, you know, being the if this, then that type of situation, you know what I mean, with what we had talked about. So.
Yep. Okay. So who's the offensive breakout player this year? You could say Cade, for instance, but overall, I mean, who do you think is going to be the one that comes out of it and we say, wow, nobody saw this coming?
That's because a lot of people we would say were somewhat established, you know, Lachey, Cade,
yeah.
All, Nico, you know, God, that's a tough one.
I already mentioned him, he was good
in at Charleston, but it's Seth Anderson. I just think he's a type of wide receiver we haven't had in a long time that is, I don't think he can take the top off the defense, but I think he could be that special guy that knows how to work a defense and find the open zones really easy. And Cade, you know, they've been working together since day one that they got here. So I just,
yeah.
I think Seth Anderson.
Okay, I'm going with Jason and Patterson. I think Caleb
okay.
is going to have
cool
a great year. I think LaShawn Williams is going to have a great year and everything. But I think Jason and Patterson, I think we saw some flashes last year. I think he's going to, you know, he might be in the return game even. I don't know.
That was my number two.
Yeah. So, okay, so who's your defensive guy? Who do we come out and say, wow, didn't see that coming?
We always have a freshman or a redshirt freshman corner that flashes. I'm going to go to Deshaun Lee. What he did
okay.
in the kids' day and what they said about him on the Big Ten Network during their visit last week, I just think, you know, Manny Rugumba, that type of, you know, year
yeah.
from him where he just comes out and he makes some special plays for us.
Okay. I'm saying Jay Higgins because, yes, we know of him, but I just think he's going to be a lot bigger
yeah.
star than anybody realizes. So, anyway, hey, we're up against
the
heartbreak.
Well, and he's got the greatest dad in the world.
Yeah, he does. Roy's fantastic. He really is. So, hey, we got to run, and we're up against the end of it. So, we'll talk maybe more next week.
No, no worries.
Maybe get others involved as well. So, I'll hold you to. I'm going to ask next week if you're on. I'm going to ask what bowl game, if it's not the CFP, and a few other things. So, meantime.
I'm good for that.
We will talk later, and I want to thank everyone that was here. Thank Avid Mike and Hawkeye Mike for listening as well. Sue from New Mexico, my big sister, Duck Northwest, Indy Hawk, and T Bodie in the chat room. Thanks all of you guys for being here. In the meantime, we are hard up and against it, and so we are out. Have a great rest of your week. Have a great weekend, and we will see you all
you
next
too.
Week. Thanks, Mike. Bye.
Later. Yep, you're welcome. Bye.
Okay, folks, that was it, and we will talk more. We will talk more next week. In the meantime, I'm doing a Hankerings tomorrow, 1 o'clock Eastern time. I am going to bring up a couple things about the Trump indictments that have really hacked me off. So we will hopefully see y'all tomorrow. Have a good night, folks.